Mars ain't the kind of place to raise your kids. In fact, it's cold as hell, and there's no one there to raise them. If you did, and all the science I don't understand.
Greetings, programs, and welcome to Quarks in Recreation. I am your co-host, Doug.
Another co-host, Brandon.
Today we're covering the inner solar system. We wanted to do the entire thing, but it's a pretty big place, so we thought it'd be better to split in half.
Yeah.
Couple things before we get going. On the last podcast, we had to do it a little bit of a technological rope-a-dope where I had Brandon dialing in via FaceTime and my buddy Darren dialing in via FaceTime, so sound quality was a little lower that time, but we should be good to go today. Ready?
Yeah, I think I am.
All right, so I figured we'd kick off just going through the solar system in order. We'll start with Mercury, which is the closest planet to the sun.
The closest planet to the sun, but not the hottest.
Not the hottest. That's actually reserved for Venus, which is much, much hotter, and we'll get to why when we get to that planet. Mercury's kind of interesting for a lot of other reasons, though. It looks kind of boring on the outside. It's just this kind of gray ball with a lot of craters. It looks like the moon. But on the inside, it's actually kind of different.
Like crater, and like there's no water, obviously.
actually, there is a little water. You'd be surprised that there are places on Mercury. There are shadows that, because of the way that they're angled, no light ever gets in there, so they stay cold all the time. The day side of Mercury is, you know, hundreds and hundreds of degrees hotter than it is here on Earth, but the night side of Mercury is much, much, much colder than it is here on Earth. So there's actually room for ice to stay there on Mercury. Not a lot of it, but more than you'd think.
But obviously we wouldn't be able to survive there. Probably no. I can't think of atmosphere.
There's no atmosphere to speak of. There's a very, very thin, wispy atmosphere that's there from time to time. It's mostly just particles from the sun that come out and get to Mercury, and Mercury's gravity is very, very low. Mercury's a little bit bigger than the moon, and its gravity is actually a bit more. Mercury and Mars have roughly the same gravity, which is not a lot to hold on to an atmosphere, especially if you're that close to the sun just roasting you.
Very hot, like Africa.
Way hotter than Africa. Probably about, I have a cheat sheet here. It is on average 333 degrees Fahrenheit on the surface, on the day side of Mercury.
Well, I guess it'd be Africa for about a half a second, and then you roast up and die.
Yeah, you get to stay on the light side for a little while. You could stay right on the, what's actually called the Terminator, which is the right on the line where day turns into night, and I guess you could hop from one side to the other and maybe hang out there for a little while, but it wouldn't be pleasant, and you certainly couldn't survive without a spacesuit.
Definitely. And Mercury has no moons, is what I presume.
Yes, it has none. Although, just because a planet is small doesn't mean it can't have moons. Actually, Pluto, although not a planet anymore technically, has 5 moons. And there are asteroids that have moons. So, size doesn't matter, really, when it comes to having satellites. But Mercury doesn't have any, for reasons we don't really know. It just didn't form any, and never captured any, so there's none there. But Mercury's density is actually really high. For as small as it is, it's really, really heavy. And it turns out the inside of Mercury, Mercury actually has a big iron core, much, much larger compared to its size than the Earth's core. And so one possibility is that Mercury was once maybe a larger planet, and during its formation, some of the lighter parts got stripped away. We don't really know yet, but it has a magnetic field. It has which is driven by an iron core. So there's actually more to Mercury than meets the eye.
I have a little question myself. You said that asteroids have moons, but don't asteroids move? Does that mean the moon moves with like the gravity pull?
Yep, absolutely. Just like the Earth's moon follows it as it goes around the sun. All a moon really is it's just an object that's in orbit around another object that's not a star. So you could have two objects, and here's another one for Pluto. Pluto and its biggest moon, Charon, actually, Charon does kind of go around Pluto, but actually they really, to be more accurate, they go around each other because they're so comparable in size, or one's big enough compared to the other one. The Earth does the same thing. The Earth actually wobbles back and forth slightly as the moon pulls around it. So they both kind of move around each other, depending on how you think about it.
Wow. I guess it takes only 88 days for Mercury to go around the sun.
That's true. It's the closest planet.
So obviously a smaller orbit.
Right. It goes in a smaller circle around the sun. It's much, much closer. It's very hard to see with the naked eye because it's so close to the sun. It's hard to see it. You can't see it during the daytime because the sun is too bright. But sometimes just after sunset, you can spot it just above the horizon if it's in the right place. So it's one of what I would call the ancient planets, in that our ancestors knew about it way back into ancient Greek times and things. They knew about Mercury. It has the same property to the sun, mostly that it tends to keep one side facing the sun all the time and one side facing away, but it does actually rotate just enough. So maybe we should move on to Venus, which is our sister planet, sort of.
Well, there's this book or movie or whatever it's called. It's like a Day on Venus or whatever, and I just think it's so funny how there's like 20 years where it just rains, but Venus is not that cold.
No, it rains. It just doesn't rain like we think it rains on Venus. It actually rains things like heavy metals and sulfuric acid. It's a really awful place. It's as you, Brandon, you said earlier, it's actually hotter than Mercury, even though it's farther away from the sun. And the reason for that is what we call the greenhouse effect. You may have heard about global warming here on Earth.
It's pretty much like when heat goes in, it doesn't come out in a way.
The atmosphere of Venus is made primarily of carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide is really, really good at trapping heat. Now, here on Earth, there's not a lot of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's about 400 parts per million right now. So for every million atoms of the Earth's atmosphere, only 400 of them will be carbon dioxide. But that's enough to keep us kind of at an even temperature. In fact, it used to be mostly 300 parts per million, and now we've upped it to 400 by being jerks to the planet, and that's why it's getting hotter. But you can imagine where almost the whole atmosphere is carbon dioxide, and you can think about how hot it can get. Not only that, but the atmosphere of Venus is about 90 times thicker than it is on Earth. So not only is it really hot, but it's crushingly heavy.
It's harder for heat and cold air to get in and out.
Well, there is no cold air getting in. Even on the nights, Venus actually rotates very, very slowly, and it rotates in the opposite direction from all the other planets. So slowly, in fact, that a year on Venus is shorter than a day on Venus because it takes so long to move. So even if you're on the night side of Venus, where in theory it's going to be night for a very, very long time as it rotates slowly, it still doesn't cool off. The atmosphere is just a big blanket that keeps it boilingly hot. You could melt lead on the surface of Venus. That's how hot it is.
That is very, very hot. I wouldn't like to go there. I'd rather be on Mercury.
You would rather be on Mercury. It's actually a lot easier. It would be a lot easier for people to go visit Mercury than it would be to go visit Venus. Right now, we don't have any technology that would easily allow us to visit Venus and let alone get off of it again. You certainly couldn't grow food there. It's not, you couldn't, even if you had some kind of a special dome to protect you from the environment, it would be very, very difficult for human beings to make some kind of an outpost there. It's pretty rough.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very good at all. I mean, it just sounds so gross.
Yeah, the theory is that maybe it used to be more like Earth, but conditions change. One possibility is that the reason it rotates so slowly is that it was hit by something and that slowed it down.
Like pushed it the opposite way.
Yeah, and once one side was kind of roasting in the sun for a very long period of time, that allowed its oceans to evaporate, fill the atmosphere with gases that trap more heat, which then cause reactions that trap more heat and more heat until it just runs away. So that's a possibility. Could be volcanic activity. Venus has a lot of volcanoes. There's a lot of carbon that's just trapped in rocks and things, and if it gets released and it gets into the atmosphere, then that carbon dioxide can build up and make it worse. So it's just kind of one bad stroke of luck after another for Venus. Venus also has no magnetic field. Its core, for whatever reason, isn't spinning the way ours is, and that's what makes the magnetic field. And the magnetic field around the planet protects a planet from a lot of the harmful radiation that comes out of the sun. So we have one, but Venus does not. And that may have played a role as well as to why it is in the state it's in now.
Huh.
So,
yeah.
It also has no moons. We visited both of these planets a few times, but with robots. Obviously no people, but not as many times as we've gone to Mars, for example, because Mars is just much, much easier to work with. In fact, the probes that were sent, only the Russians have actually landed anything on Venus, and their probes, most of them didn't even survive to make it all the way down to the surface, and the few that did only worked for an hour or two before the electronics just fried.
What, out of the two planets we have already talked about, which one do we have more knowledge about?
Probably Venus. It's a little bit closer, and frankly, it's sort of more interesting because it's weird. I don't think we've only sent maybe 2-3 robots to Mercury, not very much. There's one there right now called Messenger, and it's currently orbiting Mercury and taking a lot of planets. And because we haven't spent a lot of time with Mercury, we're learning a lot more every day about it than we knew before, by leaps and bounds. Venus, we sent the Russians sent a few robots. We sent a few robots to go take pictures of it, and then we sent a robot called Magellan, and that orbited Venus for several years. And it took a bunch of, now you can't see the surface in visible light because the atmosphere is thick and it just looks like a big yellow fog. But with radar, you can bounce radar off the surface, and when it bounces back, you can use that to create a radar image. So we've actually mapped almost maybe 98% of the surface of Venus. So we know a lot more about it.
Venus. Venus, Venus, Venus.
It's not... it tells us a lot. It teaches us a lot about atmospheric conditions and weather and such that we can sort of take those lessons and bring them home, which brings us to Earth.
Sweet home.
It's a nice planet to live on. The only one we got. What to say about Earth? It's 93 million miles from the sun. It goes back and forth between as close as a little over 91 million, a little as far away as 94 million, because its orbit isn't perfectly circular. But it has a 23 or so degree tilt, which means it's not straight up and down relative to the sun, and that's what gives us our seasons. So during certain parts of the year, the southern hemisphere is a little closer to the sun and spends more time during the day, and then the other part of the year, it's summer here in California, so right now our side of the planet's getting closer and getting more heat.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, not all the planets are like that. We have this nice kind of perfect... we're at a nice angle to the sun that lets that happen. Some of the other planets have much, much different tilts. So Mercury is pretty much straight up and down. Venus is not. Mars actually has a similar tilt to us, and when we get to Uranus on our next episode, that one's very, very different. One of the things that helps us out is the moon. Actually, the moon keeps our planet kind of in balance. It keeps us kind of rotating and spinning in a nice level way, and there's some thought among scientists that if we didn't have a moon, the planet might be more likely to kind of tumble around as it moves around the sun. So we wouldn't have a nice stable day or seasons.
Oh.
At least not to the same degree.
I heard that Venus is like, how much smaller, like a third smaller or whatever than the Earth? Or
actually, Venus is only a little bit smaller than the Earth. That was one of the reasons it was originally thought of as, quote, Earth's twin. Now, the weather, it turned out to be pretty different. But in terms of their size, Venus is maybe... I don't know, 90% the size of the Earth. It's roughly the same. It has roughly the same gravity that the Earth does. It's made up of mostly the same stuff on the inside, we think. But yeah, other than that, they're very, very different. But they're roughly the same size. Mercury is much smaller. Mercury is a little bigger than the moon, but not a whole lot. And Mars is about a third the size of the Earth.
Our planet has mostly water, ocean, and little land.
Well, we do and we don't. On the surface, yeah. Although the ocean is mostly, on average, 2 miles deep. So when you think about how big the Earth is, a 2 mile thick skin of water along the top isn't actually that deep. And the atmosphere is also only a few miles thick. If you were to shrink the Earth to the size of an apple, our entire atmosphere would be the thickness of the skin on the apple. That's how thin it is.
Wow, that's...
It feels like the sky is really big and it goes on forever, but, we're only 5-6 feet tall. So, compared to that, it looks pretty big. But no, actually, our atmosphere is pretty thin, and it's the perfect thickness for us. Obviously, it's the environment we evolved in, but the atmosphere actually changed over time due to life. If you were to come to Earth in a time machine 4 billion years ago, the atmosphere would be very, very different. You couldn't breathe it. But thanks to billions of years of plant life slowly changing the atmosphere, it's now in the conditions we have today.
I have a question about how you kind of mentioned how 2 miles up or whatever of the atmosphere. How long for the last rocket that we let off take from the second it hit the ground to get away from our atmosphere?
You mean if you were to go straight up, how long would it take you to get out of the atmosphere?
Yeah.
Those rockets go pretty fast. I would think you can get up into what we would consider outer space in a matter of minutes.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't take very long. And you have to. It's actually called escape velocity, which is how fast do you have to go to get away from the Earth's gravity. And of course, even in space, you don't want to get away from the Earth's gravity. You want to keep orbiting the Earth, unless you're trying to get somewhere else, like the moon. But if you don't achieve that speed, you're going to just fall back down again. And that's one of the problems with visiting other planets, too, is, well, once you get there, they've got gravity. How do you get back off? Especially if it was a big planet like Venus, you couldn't. It would be very, very hard. But that's about how long it would take. And now we have actually a new... We retired the space shuttle a few years ago, but the U.S. has a new one called Orion that's going to come out in the next couple of years. And that's supposed to be the generation of spacecraft that will be able to get us to the moon, back to the moon, and to Mars, and even beyond. So, those things can go wicked fast.
We are talking about Orion's spaceship, not Chuck's father, Orion.
Shh! Spoilers for people who like Chuck. That's what it's named... Well, that's not what it's named after. It's named after Orion the Hunter, the famous mythical figure in constellation. But,
I've heard that.
Yeah. So, but Earth has a moon. We actually have a pretty big moon. None of the other, the only other terrestrial planet in the inner solar system that has a moon is Mars, and its moons are very, very small. They're little asteroids, actually, that just happen to get close enough to Mars to get caught. But our moon is a big one, and it plays a very large role here in our lives on Earth. It governs the tides. It's actually slowing the Earth's rotation down, believe it or not. At the time the dinosaurs were alive, a day on Earth was 18 hours long, and now, of course, a day is 24 hours long. And that's what's happening is the moon is actually dragging on the liquid parts of the Earth differently than it drags on the solid parts of the Earth, and over time, it slows the Earth very slowly. We're talking, a few milliseconds a year, but over a million years, millions of years, it adds up. So we're slowly getting slower, and the moon is slowly getting further away. It's actually...
2 inches or something like that.
Yeah, about an inch and a half a year. It's getting farther and farther away. So, again, if you were to imagine what the moon might have looked like, if you were to go back in a time machine, it would be much, much closer. And if you were to wind it all the way back to the beginning, you can imagine how close it was. In fact, it was part of the Earth.
Really?
Well, that was the idea. They looked at the fact that it was getting farther and farther away, and they said, well, let's hit the rewind button and see what would happen. It would get closer and closer and closer. The thought is that an object in the early solar system, and when the solar system formed, it formed out of a big cloud of gas and dust and rocks. So it formed by a process called accretion, which is you got a little thing and it's got a little bit of gravity, and what little gravity it uses, stuff sticks to it and it gets bigger. And if it gets bigger, it has more gravity, which means more stuff sticks to it, and so on and so on until it gets bigger and bigger. That's how planets form. But that was all happening all over the place in the solar system all at once. So it was what's called the period of heavy bombardment. It's basically a huge shooting gallery. There's rocks everywhere flying around, hitting stuff. And so they think a big one, like this, something of roughly the size of Mars, actually hit Earth about 4 billion years ago, kind of hit it with a good glancing blow from the side and knocked off a whole bunch of stuff, which eventually re-solidified into the moon.
The moon is roughly one-fourth of the size of our Earth. Is that correct?
It's a little smaller than that. It's about, how wide is it? The moon is... the moon is about 2,159 miles wide. The Earth is about 8,000 miles wide. So it's a little bit smaller than that. And the gravity on the moon is about one-sixth that of Earth. So if you weigh 60 pounds on Earth, you weigh 10 pounds on the moon.
Wow. So Neil Armstrong, when you were on, you got to feel good about yourself there.
Well, you definitely... Well, that's the problem, is you're losing weight, but you're not losing mass. You're not actually getting any smaller, but the pull is less. And actually, if you're in one of those big, heavy spacesuits, you're still not going to be... They were jumping around pretty good, but not quite as good as... If you could build a dome on the moon... And take off the spacesuit, you could have a great game of basketball. You could really jump pretty high.
20-foot hoop?
Yeah, you'd have to make the hoop pretty high. Otherwise, you'd be able to slam dunk it about that high. Even little kids would be able to have a pretty awesome hops and dunk it from great lengths. And that's our moon. The moon also, for the same reason I talked about with Mercury, has water on it. And we finally discovered that in a few... key places on the moon, which is good because you can use that water if you were to ever build a moon colony. You either use it for drinking water or you use it to make rocket fuel if you want to use the moon for a base to go somewhere else.
Speaking of the moon, I think we have a little thing about the moon here.
We do. It's a good time to do our segment on The Internet is Dumb.
Yes.
Internet is dumb.
So this week on The Internet is Dumb, we're covering a big, big hoax, which is a lot of people believe, and actually you believe too, that the moon landing was fake. And there's a lot of evidence for the idea that comes from the idea that we were in big competition with the Russians, and we couldn't get to the moon ourselves, but we really wanted the people to think that we could, so we did it in a movie studio. There's a lot of evidence to prove that we didn't actually fake the moon landing, that we really went there. We want to take it away?
Yeah. One theory is the astronauts are putting up the American flag, but it waves. There is no wind on the moon.
Right.
The evidence for this, it says the flag is held up by a horizontal bar and simply moves when it is unfurled, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, essentially the idea is you see this flag waving and you go, hey, wait a minute, there's no air on the moon. Why is the flag waving? Well, it turns out there isn't air on the moon, but there were people moving around. And if they touch the pole or go near the pole, the pole is still going to vibrate from that. And that's what makes it look six times we landed on the moon. You'll see it never really moves at all. At least not when someone isn't touching the pole or has just finished touching the pole. So that's one. What's the next one?
No stars are visible in the pictures, taken by the Apollo astronauts.
Yeah, this is another thought, which is, hey, you know, if there's no air on the moon, you should be able to have a great view of all the stars. And the truth is you can have a great view of all the stars from the moon, but... a camera placed on the moon. Think of how bright the moon is at nighttime. Now imagine you're actually on it. It's much, much brighter when you're up close. And that glare is too much, especially for the cameras we were using in the 1960s and early 1970s. It's glare. And in fact, if you look at images even now, the International Space Station has a cool camera on it, a real-time feed, and you can go on and look at HD views of the Earth from space. You can't see any stars in that either, even though you would think they should be visible. But it's just the nature of the way these cameras work. There's still stars there, and if you asked Buzz Aldrin or any other guys who were on the moon, they'll tell you they could see the stars just fine.
And thinking of whoever landed on the moon, didn't Neil Armstrong recently die?
He did, not that long ago, too. I want to say maybe 2 or 3 years ago he finally passed away. He was a very private guy, too, but Buzz Aldrin is always on camera. He's always finding ways to keep talk about that mission, and it's an important mission. There's other people come up with evidence that people come up with for the moon is fake. The moon landing was fake. One is the rocks that we supposedly brought back are those are just moon rocks from Antarctica. And Antarctica is full of meteors that when they land they'll crash land and they're a good place to find them. They're easy to find because they're in the snow and the snow's white and then the rock is black. So we found meteorites there that were originally blasted off the moon. We found ones from Mars. The problem is those rocks have gone through the Earth's atmosphere and have been totally burned up by that process. The rocks that are just native to the moon don't look like that. They're slightly different, and they've been tested and confirmed to be from the moon. But the biggest evidence that we didn't fake the moon landing is that the stuff that we left up there is still there, and you can see it. And in fact, there's some of it that we use for scientific experiments today. The Apollo astronauts left these reflecting, basically these big mirrors on the moon. And we can bounce lasers off of those mirrors to measure. That's how they measure the distance to the moon, is they'll shoot a laser, they'll measure the amount of time it takes for the laser to go there and come back, and that tells us how far the moon, how far away the moon is. So we couldn't have done that if we didn't actually go there.
Can you see that from your backyard, or are they so small?
It's too small and too far away. But there are satellite images that we've taken of the moon, of the landing site, and you can see them. It's a little blurry. It's hard to make them out. But you can see the landers, because the way they worked is the lander would land, and then there was a piece of it that would take off when there was time to leave the moon, but part of it would stay there. They'd leave it behind. And that stuff is obviously still there. So are the cars that we brought up there, and the flags are still there.
I have a little thing to tell.
Okay.
About 5 years... this is kind of like a question, too. Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, I was outside. It was nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how sometimes, there's, the red air on the moon? Like, it looks red?
Yeah.
Because of, the clouds and the sun. And
mm-hmm.
Well, I had a friend. He looked up and said, "I see the American flag."
Mm-hmm. He's either an X-Man, he's got the greatest eyes you've ever seen, or he couldn't really see it. But the moon does turn red. It doesn't. The moon itself doesn't turn red. It looks like it turns red because what's happening is, think about when light gets red at sunset. It's because the light from the sun is coming through the atmosphere at an angle where it's thicker. There's more air for the light to go through, and it turns red. Well, if the moon is in the right place behind the Earth, that red light comes from the sun through the Earth's atmosphere and onto the moon, and then it reflects back at us, and it looks redder. So that's why you get what they call a harvest moon, when it just looks redder than it really is. And it's also sometimes it looks bigger, and the reason it looks bigger is if it's lower to the horizon, the Earth's atmosphere is curved. And so just like a glass, like if you look through a drinking glass, it bends light. Earth's atmosphere does the same thing. So sometimes the sun and the moon will look bigger when they're close to the horizon. But, of course, they're not changing size.
Okay. So, I think that wraps it up for the moon.
I think so. One last thing on the conspiracy theory. You always have to be careful about conspiracy theories because they sound really fun, but they're all premised on one thing, which is people need to keep a secret. And people are pretty bad at keeping secrets, especially in the government, it seems like. So you can imagine, the Apollo program was enormous. Thousands and thousands of people worked on it. So I can't imagine thousands of people managing to keep that secret for that long. Just not possible. So anyway, like I said, we brought back souvenirs, and the stuff we left is still there for all to see. So it's a hoax. But we can move on to the fourth planet from the sun, Mars. This is obviously a planet that's captured our imagination for a long time, especially as part of pop culture.
And did you know that Mars needs moms?
Mars needs moms. There are no moms on Mars, at least that we know
what?
Of. There are none. Well, there could be life on Mars. We've been debating that for a long time. We haven't found direct evidence of life yet, but we've certainly found evidence that suggests there might have been life.
Like a giant face, but it looks like our Sphinx is what I think.
Well, that's one that for a long time, one of the first probes we sent to Mars was called Viking. And part of Viking landed on the surface, and another part of it was just orbiting around taking pictures. And they snapped this picture of a thing that looks like a face. But it's sort of like when you see stuff in the clouds, and it looks like something. But
and then once it moves at an angle, it's different.
Yeah, actually, we went back there with better cameras and took like a high-resolution picture of that. It looks nothing like a face. But if it's kind of blurry and the shadows are right, it sort of looks like a face.
Another thing is, once in a while I get bored, so I go ahead and look at pictures of Mars and stuff.
Oh, cool. And that's a great thing to do.
Like the little probes. And one picture that they have a big debate on is a little, like, black spot in the background, and they debate if that's, like, a Bigfoot. Or...
Yeah, that's always those things. Is, you know, it's most likely it's just something blurry in the background. It's, or, you know...
Photobomb.
Yeah, there's no Martians walking around, because the atmosphere of Mars is very, very thin. It's about a hundredth as thin as the Earth's atmosphere is. So it's not quite being in total vacuum of space, but it's close. So it'd be very, very hard to live on the surface of Mars. But there may be microbes that live under the surface. In fact, the first probes we sent, the Viking landers that actually landed on Mars, my dad actually worked on those probes too, and he worked on the chemistry, where they picked up some of the dirt and they analyzed it to see what it was like and what was in it. One of the experiments they did was they said, we'll bring a little food along and we'll put the food in the dirt, essentially, and see if anything eats it. And they got results that were, they were indeterminate, because it wasn't clear if what they were seeing was the result of life consuming the food, or a natural chemical reaction that was not life. And to this day, those results are kind of debated. The idea of life on Mars has also been kind of kept alive, because recently there have been observations of methane in the Martian atmosphere. And methane is a byproduct of life. It is, let's be frank, a fart. And it's something left over from digestion. Now, it also occurs naturally. But on Mars, in theory, the methane should be going away, because Mars doesn't have a magnetic field and it has a very thin atmosphere, so the sun should be stripping away that methane and it shouldn't be there, but it's being replenished somehow. So the question is it being replenished by life, or is it being, or is it just something that's underneath the Martian surface and slowly bubbles up through the ground over time? We don't know yet.
Yeah. Nobody's ever landed on Mars, right? Or
no people. But we've sent...
How many probes?
Ooh, that's a good question. We've actually sent quite a few. There were two Viking landers. There was the Pathfinder mission. There are the Spirit and Opportunity rovers. There was the Martian Phoenix lander. And there is the current Mars rover, Curiosity. But that's about a third of them. The other two-thirds of robots that we've sent to Mars either never made it or crash-landed, or we never heard from them again. It turns out it's pretty hard to land stuff on another planet. One of the most embarrassing ones was called the Beagle. And the problem that the Beagle had was the people doing the math. Some people did part of the math in inches in the English system. And some of the other folks on the team did the math in, like, centimeters and in metric. So the two didn't sync up with each other, and they lost the probe. It crashed into Mars at the last second.
When I think of a probe, I think of WALL-E. Is that what they look like?
Sort of. They kind of look, they look bigger. A little, they're bigger. Well, the first one called Pathfinder is about the size of WALL-E. It was a little shoebox-sized guy that had a little solar panel on its back, and it could drive around and take 3D pictures and measure stuff. Spirit and Opportunity are a little bigger. They're, I'm trying to think of, they're kind of the size of a piano. They're a little bit bigger. Or a desk, or something like that. And Curiosity is like a golf cart. It's much bigger. But what they look like are, they're kind of insect-like. They're six wheels on each of them. And then there's just kind of a big rectangle on top of the six wheels that houses all of the solar panels and the scientific instruments. And then they have a couple of arms with like a drill on them, or a camera or a laser, different things they use to test stuff. But they have six wheels instead of four, because if one of them breaks, then they have five more instead of going down to three. It's always important to have backup, since there's no repairman out there.
You know how the Earth is always running out of room, I guess, because of all the trash?
Can we put it on Mars, is the question?
I mean, the question is, can we put it anywhere instead of Earth to let us have more room? Because I'm guessing a couple tons of debris won't be so big in a giant space.
Well, that's the thought, is we thought, could we put our pollution or our trash into space? The problem is, Earth's gravity is really strong, and it takes an enormous amount of energy just to put a tiny thing into space. So it wouldn't be very efficient if we had to burn hundreds and hundreds of gallons of rocket fuel to put, you know, a few pounds of stuff into orbit. We're better off figuring out how to deal with that stuff here on Earth, unfortunately. But there's still a lot of room to put trash in the desert and things, so we're a little ways away from that. There's other kinds of pollution we need to deal with first before just flat-out litter, but still a problem. So, yeah. It would be nice if we could build a big catapult or something and just shoot it out there, but unfortunately we're not there yet.
Mars, that's what we're doing.
Yes, yes. To get back to, on track to Mars.
Has two moons.
It does have two moons. They're not like our moon. They're not big and round. They're little potato-shaped moons, and they're maybe 16 miles across or so. But they are asteroids, and they're asteroids that wandered close to Mars, and they didn't wander so close that they crashed into Mars, and they didn't get not close enough, so they just kept flying on by. They actually got captured in Mars's gravity, but they are not going to be there forever. One of them, I forget which one, is actually getting closer and closer and will probably in the next million years or so crash into Mars. And that'll be pretty spectacular. And then the other one, I think, is slowly getting further and further away. So Mars doesn't have those moons forever, but they're called Phobos and Deimos. I think they've tried to land stuff on them. I don't know if anybody's actually succeeded in doing it. I'd have to look that up. I know the Russians tried. I think it might have failed, though.
I thought you had said Frodo, and I thought Lord of the Rings is not our show today.
No, and there's, as far as I know, there aren't any Lord of the Rings objects in the solar system. The Astronomical Society meets to figure out, well, when we find something new, what should we call it? For example, all of the moons of Uranus are all Shakespeare characters. But mostly they're from Greek and Roman mythology and other cultures' mythology, too. There's a few other objects out there that have names from other mythologies. But if we found another planet that had a whole bunch of moons, maybe they would go for Tolkien stuff, and that'd be cool. They have, you know, you could land on Samwise or Gollum or something.
Yeah, Gollum, I'd like that.
And that brings us to probably the asteroid belt, which is our last stop on our tour of the inner solar system. There's not much to say about it. It is, of course, a field of asteroids between Mars and Jupiter.
Big.
It's not that... Well, it's wide. It's a wide expanse of stuff. But people always picture it in the movies like a swarm of rocks, and it's actually pretty empty. If you were to go there, you wouldn't see asteroids flying all over the place. There's one, you know, for every, you know, several hundred thousand miles, if that.
Obviously, the galaxy's big, so there's a lot of them, asteroids, in there.
There's a lot of them, but yeah, the solar there's still a lot of asteroids in the asteroid belt, but they're spread over such a wide area that you wouldn't really be running into them all the time. So far, we've sent lots of probes to the outer solar system, and of course, they have to go through the asteroid belt to get there, and they all got through safely. If there were tons of them the size of, like, pebbles, that would be enough to just totally smash our probes. Because the relative speed would be so fast. Because those probes are moving, you know, 50,000 miles an hour. So it would be like getting shot with a bullet at that speed. So, but they made it. They all made it through. The biggest asteroid there is Ceres, which is actually, it's actually a dwarf planet. It's big and round. One-third of all the mass in the asteroid belt is in Ceres. And in 2015, we're actually going to get a look at it up close when we get a probe over there to take some close-up pictures of it.
Is it possible that the Ceres can hit a planet such as Earth or Mars?
No. They're all in a stable orbit. That's the one thing about the asteroid belt is, like we said before, the solar system was formed out of a swarm of stuff. Well, these are the places where what's left of the swarm is there. Everything else got swept up and absorbed into other planets. So this is a spot where, because of Jupiter and Mars's gravity as they kind of move around it, they sort of keep it in check with their gravity. So the asteroids there just sort of sit there in that belt. So they rarely, unless they bump into each other and go off in separate directions, which is very, very unlikely to happen, they're not going anywhere. They're staying in those orbits. Now, there are other asteroids and things that orbit the sun that do come our way all the time that could hit us. In fact, there was one that almost it hit Russia. In 2013, it was huge. It was maybe
very loud,
very, very loud, and it exploded over the city of Chelyabinsk, I think is how you pronounce it. But nobody got hurt.
Really?
Nobody got hurt. Well, I should take that back. Some people got hurt. They didn't get hit by the asteroid, but for example, people went up to their windows to look at it, and then when the sonic boom happened when the asteroid exploded, they got cut by the glass. So about 1,000 people actually got injured.
The death, probably. They got
hurt. Yeah, the noise was loud. So there were injuries from it, although there were no direct hits from the rock itself. But it was about 60 feet wide, they think. Pretty big as local asteroids go. It would have done a lot of damage if it had hit the Earth.
I mean, how many miles of damage would have it hit?
Took down? Let me put it this way. There's a crater in Flagstaff, Arizona, and it's about the crater itself is about a mile wide. They think that the rock that did that damage was probably the size of a car. So that's how... Think about it this way. The Earth is traveling through the solar system at 17 or so miles a second. That's pretty fast. So imagine if you were sitting still and it's hanging out in the Earth's orbit and the Earth came zooming at you at 17 miles a second. Think about how much force that would be if you got hit in the face with a punch the size of Earth going that fast. So even if you're a small little asteroid and now you're an asteroid going back at Earth also even faster, well, where's all that energy going to go when the two collide? Well, the energy is going to hit the Earth and then rebound back out, and that's what makes the crater. But it's an enormous amount of energy that gets unleashed. The other one is that I can think of in recent memory is Tunguska, which happens to be... Russia's a big target to hit, so Russia gets all the fun. In the early 1900s, I want to say 1906 or 1909, an object flew through the atmosphere and, again, exploded over Russia. It didn't actually hit the ground, but it leveled trees. You can see the footage from it because it actually got out there with early movie cameras. And it's just an entire forest is just flattened.
Dang.
All the trees are spread out in a circle from the area where it almost hit.
The crater in southern Mexico.
The Chicxulub crater.
The one that supposedly took the dinosaurs. How big was the crater that
The rock?
Yeah.
The rock on that one is supposed to be between 1 and 6 miles wide.
So, like...
That was it. It only took an object 1 to 6 miles wide hitting the Earth to wipe out almost all of life on Earth in one shot.
And I'm guessing the one that hit... I can't pronounce their city in Russia. Begleda?
Chelyabinsk. Chelyabinsk.
Chelyabinsk. That was probably the size of a house?
Yeah, they think it's maybe 60 feet wide, something like that. But still, it's made out of solid iron and nickel, like heavy, heavy metals. So those things can do a lot of damage when they hit the ground. So that's pretty much it for our tour of the solar system. Let me get to our mailbag. She wrote about it. Return to sender. Address unknown. No such number.
No such song. I don't want to read all this mail.
Our first question is from Ryan H. People always talk about life on Mars. Is it possible there's life on one of the other planets?
It's always possible. Anything's possible.
And especially until you go and test it. That's the most important part of science, is you got to keep asking questions and be open to find things. Because if you're not asking the questions, you'll never get the answers.
Yeah.
To answer this one, it is possible that there is life on other planets. Certainly, we haven't ruled out Mars yet. There could be stuff underground. And we'll talk about it there's actually a lot of places in the outer solar system where we think there could be life. So we'll save that part of the question for our next episode. And then the other one that, believe it or not, there has been one theory.
Not Pluto,
not so much. But Venus, believe it or not. Even though the surface of Venus is miserably hot and full of sulfuric acid and just nasty, there's a thought that maybe there is life that can survive in the upper atmosphere of Venus, where it's cooler, that just gets blown around by the wind and lives in, even though the atmosphere is harsh, there's all kinds of microbes that live in harsh environments on Earth. They live in underwater volcanic vents, they live in arsenic-filled lakes and things. I mean, there's nasty places on Earth where life has managed to figure out how to survive. So it's possible. So we'll definitely talk about those other locations when we do the outer solar system.
Thank you, Ryan H.
Yeah, that's a good question. Megan W. says, when do you think people will go to Mars?
Well, that's a question that you got to go ask NASA and Russia.
They have a better idea of when they want to do it.
But my hypothesis is probably in the next 100 years.
I think 100 years is a safe bet. Actually, NASA right now has a target for trying to get a person to Mars in the 2030s. It's a big challenge, obviously, to go out there. One, when you're away from the Earth's magnetic field, you're vulnerable to a lot of the radiation from the sun, so you got to make sure that you build something that people can survive in without getting killed by a solar flare. You got to figure out how to get people there. You got to figure out how to get people back. You got to figure out how to make sure they have enough air and water to, one, at least enough air to bring with them, and they can get enough water from Mars itself, and that you can find a way to grow things, because the Martian soil, at least the top part of the Martian soil, is rusty. That's why it's red. It's actually filled with iron oxide, which is like when you see rusty metal, that same chemical is what turns Mars red, and it's all over the planet. So it's
dangerous.
It's dangerous. It's a tough environment to live in. But if you can dig deep enough and the soil under it is maybe workable, we might be able to find a way to grow things and then have a surviving colony.
And the main part of that is cha-ching, money.
Yes, that's a good point. Money is it costs a lot of money to send stuff to Mars. So. Even the robots we've sent, just the robots that you don't have to feed, cost millions of dollars. But still a lot, believe it or not, people talk about how expensive NASA is. If you look at it, it's actually a very small part of the budget. I think the entire Curiosity rover, if everyone in the United States chipped in $1, you'd get pretty close. There's about 300 million people in the United States. So I think most people would be willing to chip in a few bucks to try and get to Mars. Josh A., this is our last question. Could the asteroid belt have been a planet that got broken apart?
No.
I'd say yes, actually, but not a planet. The asteroid belt doesn't have enough mass in it. To give you an idea, Ceres, the biggest object in the asteroid belt, is one-third of all the material, and Ceres is 4% the size of the Earth. So if you were to mush all of that matter together into one planet, it would still be only a 12% the size of the Earth, which is way smaller than the Moon and Mercury. It'd still be a very small, small planet. But it would potentially be a planet. And that goes into the definition of what a planet is, why Pluto's not a planet anymore. And we'll cover that on our next one. We go to the outer solar system. So, great questions, and keep them coming. By the way, if you want to ask us questions, you can tweet us at Quarks and Rec. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Quarks and Rec, or go to our website, quarksandrec.com. Be sure to spread the word. I'm wearing my Planetary Society shirt today, actually, and you can, thank you for the applause. You can sign up for the Planetary Society, go online. It's run by Bill Nye, the science guy. It's only $35 to start. And they do a lot of great work. So if you're interested in the solar system, that's a good place to look up. Before we go, there are two more things that are not really viewer questions, but they got a lot of interesting discussion on Twitter, on our Twitter account. So I wanted to talk about them. One, we tweeted something about Venus, which was, you know, the only probes that got there melted really quickly. Could we send something that could last longer, like our Mars rover? Spirit and Opportunity have been going strong over 10 years. Could we build something to go to Venus and last longer? I think the answer is yes, but it's hard. Venus is obviously a very nasty environment, and if you can melt lead there, that's going to be pretty tough on electronics. But we can build things. There are certain types of ceramics and other materials that will stay solid at those temperatures. One thought I had was you could build a glider, and that way it would move down into the lower part of the atmosphere, take a bunch of pictures, take a bunch of measurements, and then before it gets too hot, glide back up to where it's cooler again. So. Maybe it's possible, maybe not, but this is where creative engineering goes in. Every time someone says scientifically it can't be done, I think we should think a little harder and see if maybe it can be. We're just not there yet. You know, for a long time people would have said, you know, my grandparents when they were kids never would have thought they would have seen anyone go to the moon in their lifetime. And we did it in 1969, and the idea is you got to dream big. I think that's important.
Yeah.
The other one, before we go, is I tweeted something about, I said, good science means always being able to admit when you're wrong. And when, you know, even if you got a good hypothesis going, if the evidence doesn't come out your way, you have to be willing to say, oh, well, I got a different result than what I was expecting. Now I have to explain that. And you just have to follow the evidence. And the case in point I gave was a guy named Johannes Kepler, who was a famous astronomer who lived in the late 1500s, early 1600s, and for over 10, maybe even 20 years, he had this idea about the orbits of the planets, that all the orbits of the planets matched up with these perfect geometric shapes discovered by an ancient Greek named Euclid. And so he thought, well, one was like a pyramid inside a cube, inside a dodecahedron. It was a really cool idea, but the problem was none of his none of the observations of the planets actually matched that idea. And he clung to it for a long time. He clung to it, like I said, for over a decade. But then he finally wised up, looked at his math, and said, you know what? Even though I love my cube and pyramid and dodecahedron idea, I got to let it go. And as soon as he did that, he took a better look, and he wrote the laws of planetary motion, and he figured out exactly the mathematics to describe how the planets move around the sun, and we still use those laws today. And in fact, there is a robot probe that we have orbiting the Earth that is finding planets around other stars, and it's named after him. So that's a good moral lesson for anybody who wants to pursue a career in science.
I think I know the mathematical equation, too.
For Kepler's laws?
Yes.
Okay, go for it.
1 + 1 equals 2.
That's the first part. That's pretty good. You got to move on to the more complicated parts.
2 + 2 = 4.
And we'll be back with the rest of this on our next episode of Quarks and Recreation. Next time we're covering the outer solar system, and then who knows what our next topic would be. If there's a topic you think you want us to cover, let us know, and we'll definitely do that. We'll definitely try any scientific topic, even if it's something both of us know nothing about. So, until then, I'm your co-host, Doug.
I'm your co-host, Pluto. I mean, Brandon.
And this has been Quarks and Recreation. Bye, everyone. Yes, the chances of anything coming from Mars are 1,000,000 to 1, he said. Chances of anything coming from Mars are 1,000,000 to 1. But still, they come.